Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the India Glycols Limited Q3 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by Sunidhi Securities & Finance Limited. Please note that this conference call may contain certain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rohit Sinha from Sunidhi Securities. Thank you, and over to you, Rohit.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Q3 FY22 earnings call of India Glycols Limited. I would like to thank the management of India Glycols Limited for giving us this opportunity to host the call. From the management side, we have with us Mr. Roopak Saraswat, the Chief Executive Officer of the company. Along with him, we have Mr. Anand Singhal, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Sanjeev Gurwalla, President of Marketing, Mr. S.K. Shukla, Head of Liquor Business, Professor Dr. R.K. Khandal, President of R&D and Business Development, and Mr. Ankur Jain, Head of Legal and Company Secretary. Without any further delay, I would like to hand over the call to Roopak, sir, for his opening remark, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Rohit. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you for welcoming us and also for the introduction for myself and the team, and I hope all is well at everybody who's attending this call. You know, and it was good that you reminded that there is uncertainty and we can never predict the future. Never better than this time to remind us of very, very uncertain times. You know, in summary, I believe IGL has navigated these uncertain times reasonably well, and I will try and present to you or talk to you about a summary of how our performance has been so far. Very briefly, I will talk a little bit about the performance highlights and then a very important factor, which is feedstock trends, and of course, my colleagues will also throw some light on financials and other things. If you look at the performance for the quarter, and I have introduced two slides here, and the reason for that is that we have also formed a joint venture in between, so a section of the business has moved to the joint venture. When we talk about reported results, obviously the joint venture sales and profit numbers are there for the entire quarter of last year, but not there for this quarter of you know, the current year. In overall terms, you've seen a gross turnover of 1,760 crore, up 4%, a net turnover of 794 crore, down 11%, EBITDA of 62 crore, reported results down 36%, EBITDA margins of 7.7%, and PAT of 24 crore. You know very well that in our case, the gross turnover is significantly higher because we have potable spirits as one of our segments, where the excise is very high, I think of the order of 600%-700%, and that is what results in a significantly higher gross turnover number compared to the net turnover. If you look at this, the key things to point out here is that we had the EOD business which went into the joint venture with Clariant last year for the same quarter, but it is not there in this quarter. In addition, we had a long shutdown, which was about 16 days in December, including catalyst changeover, so that had some impact. As I will talk about a little bit more, we've had unprecedented escalations in feedstock and energy costs, which we think will, you know, eventually not remain that high. All in all, given these factors, I would say that we've continued to maintain the growth momentum, despite the factors that I talked about. Let me also talk about the same performance in terms of continued businesses. When I say continued businesses, you understand we've taken away the EOD numbers from both sides of the equation. This means gross turnover up 7%, not going into reading out the numbers, net turnover up 12%, EBITDA down somewhat by 11%, EBITDA margins obviously the same, and PAT up by 34% on a comparative basis. So when we talk about continued businesses, obviously the joint venture businesses have been excluded from the comparison, but the EO sales to the joint venture obviously feature now as IGL sales, though you know, it does not feature much in terms of the profit. And the same factors, we've had a shutdown in December and we've had unprecedented increases in feedstock and energy costs. And given that, I may state, that it is an excellent performance for the continued business, given the circumstances that we have operated in and some of the headwinds that we've had. If you look at the nine-month overview, I have given it there in terms of, reported results. You will see a turnover which is up by 21% 9 months. EBITDA, which is down 11%. EBITDA margins of 8.77%. And PAT, which is up also because of the slump sales, up quite significantly at 273 crores. So for the 9 months, again, you will see that we believe that this is a resilient performance for the first 9 months on the back of a good bounce back. And I will talk about it a little more in the BSPC or the bio-based specialties and performance chemicals business, and also, good growth in portable spirit. Despite the shutdown and the escalation in feedstock and energy prices, margins have been under significant pressure. But I think, with these factors, you would agree with me that this has been a resilient performance. If I look at the same numbers on the basis that I spoke to you about earlier, which is continued businesses, it is gross turnover up 34%, net turnover up 42%, which is contributed by a few factors. One of them, of course, is very good performance in bio-based specialties and performance chemicals and portable spirit, but also some EO sale to the joint venture, which is included in the net turnover. EBITDA has not risen by numbers as good as the net turnover, and I think the main reason for that, as I mentioned, is headwinds which have put substantial pressure on margins. Nevertheless, we've had an overall margin of 8.63%, which is kind of in line with the margins that the business has had, and a profit of 263 crores up quite significantly. So that's the overall summary for the business results for the business. I can also give you a few quick highlights of the business, which are also there in the presentation. I talked about the shutdown, so I'll not repeat, but it does bring, some pressure on the business for the big plant being down for about 16 days. I will talk in a bit about feedstock and energy prices. To update you that we are making good progress on the two bioethanol-based projects which are in progress in Kashipur and Gorakhpur, and we expect them to be commissioned by April and June in the coming year, respectively. We've also made a small beginning, as we talked about earlier, in expanding our portfolio of BSPC, which is bio-based specialties and performance chemicals, with some spend that we're doing in modifying some of our plants to make specialty amine. So that's the kind of a beginning which we can talk to you about. And we are also investing more in upgrading one of our existing R&D buildings and putting in more equipment and infrastructure, and are also in the process of getting a few more people in R&D. So the thing to highlight about is the bounce back in bio-based specialties and performance chemicals in particular, and good growth in portable spirits. I thought I'll spend a little bit of time on talking about something which has been very, very important in terms of how we look at the business which is based on bio-based ethanol or bio-based ingredients, some of which I talked about last time, so I will not delve into great detail because I spoke about it last time. There are a number of factors which have been affecting these businesses and to some extent have caused some headwinds. And I think it's important for you to understand, for you to draw your own conclusions in terms of how the business looks going forward. And when I talk about margin compression, and hopefully looking at improvement in margins in the coming year. So you all know about the global energy crisis, which was triggered by several factors, the coal shortage in India, the significant issues that we've been having globally in terms of sustainability and green transition, what's happening to commodity prices, I'll talk about the impact of climate changes and therefore the impact on crops and so on, and the demand surge post-COVID. To give you a picture of trends on as to how it has kind of affected our business, I've just taken some important commodities which impact our business significantly. So you see that, you know, when it comes to commodities like steel, coal, ethanol, and acetic acid, you know, there has been a very sharp increase in feedstock costs, which has varied from something like 40% to a high of 70 to 80%. I've deliberately kind of not put precise numbers there because the bigger thing is to talk about trends, not about the precise numbers. And you see that, you know, your business, IGL, given these kind of increases, that's why I said it's been a resilient performance. I will talk a little bit about what happened in the bioethanol space. So what you saw in terms of the bioethanol space is that there has been a very sharp escalation in prices driven by bioethanol produced in the U.S., where prices went up from something like 1.4 gallons a dollar, dollars a gallon to 3.2 gallons a dollar in November 21. They softened a bit. We did not necessarily see the spot price increases because of our planning and contract, but there was a sharp impact. The other thing that you see on the left-hand chart, molasses-based ethanol that was produced in India has also seen an increase in prices to some extent coupled with what's happening to global ethanol prices. And one of the important factors which has led to the global ethanol prices being high is the increase in corn prices, which are shown on the right-hand side. Let me talk a little bit about the bioethanol scenario, apart from, of course, the numbers. I'm sure some of you may be interested in listening to this. So some of this data is, a little dated. It's 2019, but I think the broader picture kind of remains the same. So in terms of bioethanol consumption, you see that the U.S. is the largest producer and consumer of bioethanol. And more than 95% of the ethanol which is produced in the U.S. is corn-based. And you see that U.S. and Brazil put together produce something like 84% of global ethanol. Brazil, of course, produces most of its global ethanol based on sugarcane. And one very, very important factor is that in terms of the global trade that happens, 70% of the global trade which happens in the world in terms of export is entirely from the U.S. So which means that predominantly what happens to ethanol prices is determined by what's happening in the U.S. as of now. And 51% of the exports from the U.S. are actually to three main countries, Canada, Brazil, and India, India being the third one in that order. So what's been happening in the bioethanol space is a number of factors. You know, increasingly, with ethanol going into crude and blending, there is a coupling of ethanol which is happening to crude, which was not the case earlier. It's also closely linked to, for example, what's happening to corn, what's happening to soya. The reason being that the American farmers or farmers elsewhere very easily switch over between corn and soya. Actually, they are kind of complementing crops. What happens to palm oil, for example? So, you know, if there's a palm oil shortage, that impacts soya and therefore corn. Climate has meant what happens to the crop. Various countries are implementing blending programs and so on. So what, in general, we've seen softening of ethanol prices from the peak, but they are still kind of holding strong, and we expect that there will be some support to these firm prices for in the near future. You know, you all know about it. There's been fears about Ukraine invasion. You would say, how does it impact ethanol? The reason it impacts ethanol is that Ukraine is one of the largest exporters of wheat and corn, particularly to China. So, you know, people start expecting that therefore impacts corn prices, which therefore impacts ethanol prices. Rising crude prices is a double-edged sword for us. On one hand, as crude prices go up, our bio-based products become, more viable. But at the same time, ethanol to some extent is getting clubbed. There has been an increased demand for renewable biodiesel, which comes from, say, soybean. So people have started to plant a little bit more soybean. and therefore a little less corn, therefore impacting ethanol prices. And recently I heard a couple of days back that Indonesia has put some restrictions on export of palm oil. What also happened, as you know, because of the disruptions caused by COVID, the input costs for farmers have been higher in LATAM and elsewhere, availability of actives, which has also impacted the position which people are taking on the harvest. And the more and more countries are implementing blending programs. India targeting 20% blending in a couple of years' time. Longer term, however, I've spoken about this earlier, ethanol will move on from food-based products to cellulose-based products to, marine algae-based products to 3D ethanol to 4D ethanol, and depends on what's happening in the space to electrical vehicles, green hydrogen, renewables program, and various technology developments. The reason for showing this slide to you was that I made some comments on what has put the headwind on margins, and I thought I'll explain it to you in slightly greater detail than to just say that raw material prices will go up and therefore our margins are down, and on what basis will I say that over a period of time they will recover. So if you look at these factors, some of them are not going to stay here forever. There are balancing factors amongst these itself, and therefore we believe that our business is a strong business despite the position that we have, not a position, despite the anticipation that we have that there will be some firmness supported in the near term. Longer term, I think we will continue to find opportunities to add value to our business. And now, I have kind of done by my bit of storytelling about the business and the scenarios, coming to the more important numbers. I will request my colleague and our CFO, Mr. Anand Singhal, to brief you.
Good evening, everybody. So just to update on the quarter three numbers vis-a-vis the quarter three numbers of the last year, the revenue from operations has increased by almost 11%, or you can say 12%. While, as Mr. Rupak Sarastat has told, that the cost of the material prices has increased by 15%. So this is the main reason for the impact of the profitability for the current quarter, as well as because of the shutdown for 16 days. However, if you will see the EBITDA actual numbers is 62 crores vis-a-vis 69 of the last year corresponding quarter, showing 11% downwards. The margin has come down, EBITDA margin has come down to 7.67%, again 9.71%. But if you will see the PBT, the current quarter PBT is 31 vis-a-vis 27 of the last corresponding quarter. The main reason for the improvement is the reduction in the finance cost, which has happened due to the prepayments of the term loans and the working capital, as well as the normal payment. The PAT for the continuing operations is 28 vis-a-vis 18, showing 33% up. And of course, the margin from the continued operations has improved from 2.52% to 2.99%. So overall, we will say that the performance of the company is slightly lower vis-a-vis the last quarter, as well as the corresponding quarter of the last year. It's still, the company has managed its operations in a very well manner, keeping in mind the shutdown as well as the increased cost due to the alcohol and molasses prices and the shutdown. Regarding the next, the segment-wise net revenue, we are talking about on the basis of the net revenue. So for the current 9 months, or rather I will say current quarter, the 74% revenue has been generated by bio-waste specialities and performance chemical business, while 22% has come from potable spirits and 4% from nature and other small units. For 9 months, the 72% revenue has been generated by the bio-waste specialties and performance chemical business. 23% has come from potable spirits, means liquor division, and 5% from Nature Biopharma. So if you compare the last year vis-a-vis the current 3 months, the business is more or less same, although from 71% to 74% in case of the performance chemicals. And for the 9 months, it has increased from 65% to 72%. So overall, all the divisions are doing good, but performance chemicals has done better. Regarding the segment-wise results, the chemical, bio-based specialties and performance chemicals for the current quarter has run a net revenue of 587 vis-a-vis 505, which is up by 16%. And for the 9 months is 1,597 crores vis-a-vis 1,012 crores, which is 58% up. If you'll talk about the EBIT, the current quarter EBIT is 24 vis-a-vis 10, which is showing 136% up, while for the 9 months it is 77 vis-a-vis 20 crores, which is 280% up for the 9 months. The potable spirit business, the net revenue is 175 vis-a-vis 163 crores, which is 8% up, while EBIT is 22 against 48 crores, which is down by 55%, largely because of the prices increase in molasses and alcohol. The 9 months result, if we compare, 510 crores is the net revenue out of this business, potable spirits, vis-a-vis 440 crores, which is up by 16%. But profitability has come down to 67 crores against 114, which is down by 41%. Regarding the Nature Biopharma business, the net revenue is 33 crores for the quarter, vis-a-vis 44 crores of the corresponding last year quarter, which is about 27% negative or downtrend, while EBITDA is 8 crores against 12 crores, which is down by 35%. For the 9 months, this is 119 crores vis-a-vis 113 crores, which I will say is 6% up, which you can say is more or less same number, while the EBIT is 29 crores against 39 crores, is negative by 26%. So this is the segmental result from our side, and we will take your questions, if any, on these numbers during the call.
Yeah, Arunji, if I can just add one or two points here.
Yes, sir, please.
One is that, you know, just connecting what we said before, you see sound growth in the potable spirit segment, which is a good thing because this is a B2C market. And that's more important. However, the rise in the ethanol cost is the main issue which has brought our EBIT down by 41%. And even before you ask us this question, the things that we are doing for this is, for example, putting up the grain-based distilleries, which will significantly reduce the cost of ethanol which is available to us for the potable spirit segment. That is one. The second is that, as you know, for the potable spirit, it's not like a B2B business where we can just go out there and do a price increase. That's a long process. And you know, there has been a renewal of the policy, which also means that we will see some increase in the prices which the government itself gives for country liquor. So, you know, those are factors that we think we will address in the near future, especially in the starting of the next financial year. And the bio-based business has been driven by good sales in glycol, glycol ethers. Some of them, I must say, have also been helped by some tailwinds that we've had in terms of butyl and propyl prices, which were much higher in the global markets, and therefore we could position our products better. Just some, you know, I thought I'd just add some high-level commentary to these numbers. Nothing more from my side. Over to you for any questions, and, you know, the team is here to take them.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star and one. Sakir, you're not audible.
Hello?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Yeah. Namaskar, sir, and thank you for this opportunity. Sir, just as you have articulated the business environment for this quarter and the factors that resulted in the lower margins. So, starting from there itself, sir. Sir, currently, sir, how much have we spent on these grain-based distilleries as of now, and what capex is due, and how is this capex coming on stream will significantly change the margin profile for the potable alcohol business?
Regarding the grain distillery, the total capex size is 300 crores, and we are hopeful that one of the distillery in Gorakhpur will start operations effective April, while Kashipur will start from June. As far as the expenditure till date is concerned, we have already done say about 100 crores, the expenditure on these two distilleries, and the work is in process. So everything is going as per schedule. Expected margin. Shukla ji will take up for the expected margin.
See, you have asked a very good question, because you know the UP government, UP excise, has already announced the grain-based ethanol liquor policy for the year 2022 and 23. Precisely, I would like to inform you that in UP, all the Indian-made foreign liquor, which producing from the molasses-based ENA, will be converted 100% to the grain-based ENA with effect from 1st April 2023. So this would be the major policy change of the UP government. Second, to promote the grain-based ethanol directly linked with the, you know, the farmers' ambitious Modi's policy to increase the agriculture products, double the income to the farmers. Country liquor, there are three segments in the country liquor. 42.8 degree segment of the country liquor 100% convert into the grain based ENA. So in UP, a huge market of the grain based ENA is likely to be coming from the 1st of April, and fortunately our grain based distilleries would be ready to produce ethanol as of the start of the next financial year. So we are hoping good profit while seeing the change in the excise policy.
Just to add into this, the IRR against both the distilleries, as per our calculation, internal calculation, is within 3 years. This much I can tell you right now.
Sir, in case of the requirement for the imported alcohol, how will that dependence be anyway changed? Because as aapne jaise bataya, articulated, then the entire thing will be shifted towards the potable alcohol only, or we would be able to manufacture bio MEG also, sir, from the alcohol producer.
As per the sanction which we have got from the government of India regarding these two distilleries, we have to go for the supply of 75% of the alcohol manufactured out of these green distilleries for ethanol blending, just to avail the 50% subvention on interest. Okay, so for this we have to take up. Rest of the things I think Shukla ji will explain.
See, put together, we have good capacity, which is coming from the 1st April of the grain ENA. And we are hoping that the entire demand of the grain ENA will be certainly meet out with our production capacity, which we are presuming from the 1st half of April. So we don't think any kinds of, you know, the minus projection about the availability of the grain ENA from the 1st of April.
No, sir. My point was 75% will be routed to the ethanol blending program. The balance 25% we would be able to divert towards MEG. And what is our current, is it the first grain based or currently the ones are molasses based? The distilleries which we are operating at, usme feedstock kya hai, sir?
Currently we are using feedstock molasses. From the 1st of April, we will be planning to use the broken rice as a feedstock of grain-based extra neutral alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe I can just add if it helps. See, what happens as we put grain-based capacities is that we have three potential sources of ethanol. One, imported ethanol. Second, grain-based ethanol. Third, we also have capacities to continue to produce molasses-based ethanol. The reason I'm saying this is that, of course, excess grain-based ethanol can be routed into all of these three areas. It can go into portable spirits, it can go into biofuels, and to answer your question, it can also go into bio-based MEG. And, you know, it is difficult to give an exact number because that's an optimization exercise that we will do as to how much to import, how much to divert from grain, how much to do from molasses. The good thing from our perspective is that we have three potential sources and we have multiple potential end uses, which is biofuels, portable spirits, and bio-based specialties. Another point I would like to make here is that, you know, it depends on how much capacity you have got based on subvention. You know, there is always more capacity that we may add, which is not necessarily based on the subvention scheme and assets that you may have from before with you, and be able to generate more grain-based ethanol for other uses as well.
Okay. The short point, sir, I'm trying to conclude, please help me, is this is going to be margin incremental. With the commissioning of the distilleries, the business profile, the feedstock, the dependence on the imported feedstock should wane down and this should be margin accretive. Am I correct in my assessment, sir?
Yes. As of now, I can only talk about numbers as of now. Not talking about cost, but there is a significant delta between imported ethanol and grain-based ethanol as we see it now. Of course, you know, we talked about uncertain times, there are variables, but your assessment is correct.
Okay. So this will be margin.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. May we request you to come back in queue for follow-up questions? Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Makrantilu from Makrantilu Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for giving the opportunity. And as we know, the grain base is the future. Are we planning to expand our capacity in future?
Yes. Yes, we are planning and we have already got permission from the government for putting 200 KLPD, another grain-based distillery in Gorakhpur. So we have already everything aligned, but yes, for the capex and everything will be decided in the first quarter of the next financial year.
Okay. So we, from another con call, we came to know that per liter cost or margin is around 16 to 17 rupees for grain-based distillery. Is it correct, sir?
No, we can't give you the exact number because these are the number varies from month to month, circumstances to circumstances. Yes, we are thinking, you know, the good profit, but difficult to give you the exact number per liter. It is very difficult.
Okay, sir. Are we planning to utilize Shakambhari in any other way?
No, not now.
But there was some
good investment plan. Besides question, we don't have any plans in near future to be investing or spending in Shakambhari.
Yes, correct. No planning.
But Shakambhari, there was some disinvestment planning was there.
Yes, what we have done, we have taken the permission to increase the ethanol increment from 60 KLPD to 100 KLPD. But as such, as of now, we don't have any planning to restart or to start the Shakambhari operations.
Okay. Can you just let us know, sir, what will be our total capacity of grain-based distillery in next 2 years?
We have 110,000 TPA distilleries. Both the distilleries' capacity is the same, 110,000. No?
No.
Sorry. Shuklaji will tell you.
180,000 liters will produce from the Kasipur plant and 110,000 liters will produce from the Gorakhpur, which both the plants are in the, you know, the erection stage. And as CEO sir has told, one plant of Gorakhpur is coming on April, another is in coming on the May last. I told you earlier that another 200 KLPD plant, we have already got the permission from the UP government, but CapEx and everything will be planned in the next year.
We are evaluating.
Yeah, evaluating.
So, glad to know this new expansion because it will definitely boost the margin. Last, only one point, sir.
Makhan, may we request you to come back in queue for follow-up questions? Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bajrang Bafna from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, the management team, for clarifying, you know, the detailed, you know, analysis of the situation and, you know, the cost pressures that the company is experiencing and, you know, the direction going forward in terms of profitability and the margins. So, sir, my first question pertains to, you know, you clearly pointed out that, you know, the margin trajectory and the profitability is going to move up. So, you know, back of the envelope calculation suggests that, you know, probably next year company will be having enough cash flow, you know, to fund the future growth. And you already pointed out one aspect is that there will be another 2 lakh KLPD plant will come up for the grain-based facility. And there will be something that you are thinking on the amine-based chemistry. So, sir, broadly, if you could just, you know, guide us in terms of, you know, the chemical side, how do you see, you know, overall, you know, growth for the company for maybe next 2 to 3 years perspective? Because we are also venturing into one new area, you know, which is the amine-based chemistry. So, if we could hear something from the, you know, R&D head that how, you know, what is prompting us to move into a different chemistry. We are already into MEG and the ether side and the performance chemical side. Now we are moving into amines. So what is prompting, you know, for this entry will be really helpful and the overall future outlook on the, you know, the chemical side of the business.
Bhavnaji, thank you very much. I have only two things to say here. Number one is in future, all companies, we all know that India Glycols is a role model for self-sustainability and also the only company doing business based on renewables. In times to come, since every country has committed in COP26 meeting that they will bring their products to net zero. So the focus of India Glycols would be there to capture those fellows who would be shifting, who would be making their products not based on petroleum resources, but based on renewable resources. This is point number one I wanted to say. Our R&D will be focusing on creating new and new molecules and new process technologies, which did not exist when we had products based on petroleum crude. Like already it has been told that amine based products is one which we have already decided to go, and we are going ahead to create a big biospecialties facilities. So we will be actually targeting molecules to provide alternatives to crude based chemicals. Now we have the raw materials with us which nobody has. Number one, bio ethylene oxide, followed by smart alcohol based ethylene oxide. This is only we have. Number two, we have bio CO2. Nobody else has bio CO2 along with EO. There are people who have bio CO2 but not along with EO. So there are several possibilities which R&D would be working, like going on carbonates and polycarbonates. Then already amine we have already decided, and suppose we with the success of amine, if we go for backward integration and produce our own amines, then it will be a very big boon for the company and for the country.
Got it. And to the management team, my second and the last question pertains to, we entered into some sort of arrangement on this carbon smart feedstock with Unilever and Lululemon, and if you could just cite what is the progress on that side, how, because LanjaTech is, we have been hearing in the market that they are entering into, some of the arrangements with petrochemical plants and the steel plants of the country. So any progress on that front, and when can we see some sort of, revenue generation on that count, and what could be the size of that? Some ballpark assessment of that will be really helpful, sir.
Bhavsar ji, I would only like to say from the technical point of view, please understand all companies of FMCG business, Unilever was the one first who started it. Now everyone, under the sun, would be shifting it. So number one is opportunity for the C-Smart alcohol based products. Number two is the LanzaTech is also expanding their base outside China and coming to India and setting up facilities. But to answer your question, when will the figures start coming? I think it will be take by the end of this year, things will become clear, but obviously on the exponential upward side. I think our marketing chief would like to comment on this, but from technical side, this is what it is.
So, we have spoken about it, that we understand this is something that we have established, but we also understand this is a nascent area, and yes, we would be producing some of the carbon smart products in the first half of the next year, some in the second half of the next year. We are also working on putting up facilities for those. It's of course very exciting to all of us because it is based on emissions. But we also know that it commands a premium. It's also related to availability of carbon smart ethanol. It's a little difficult to precisely give numbers as of now. Let's build this business. I'm sure we'll be coming to you every quarter to give you an update on how that's progressing. Sanjeev, would you like to add?
All right. I think we've had discussions with LanzaTech, and I think from the discussion, it emerges that they are trying to work out the quantity of C-Smart alcohol which would be available and which they can give us, and some logistical constraints which they have, because the material will come from China. So they are working it out, and like Rupak ji has said, it will gather momentum from the next this half of the year, the next half of this year, and I think from next year onwards, I think it will be, the quantities will be much more. I think now we are, finalizing the operations so that to make the whole operation successful. But one positive thing is that there are at least 8 or 10 companies which have shown interest and are in discussions with us, and we will take them forward, and I'm sure that we can collaborate with them, and I think make it a success in the coming times.
Got it. Sir, just from a curiosity perspective, on this carbon smart ethanol, you know, we know that now, you know, most of the companies in the world are moving towards a direction that, you know, if they want to reach 100% over the next 20 or 25 years, you know, in terms of carbon neutrality, they have to start somewhere. And that beginning has, you know, started, let's say, from now onwards. So every year, even if they think of 1 or 2% gets converted into carbon neutrality, that provides an opportunity to our company. But, you know, from a competition perspective vis-a-vis crude, you know, what sort of price difference that this carbon smart ethanol or this carbon smart feedstock will be having? Because we know ethanol is available at 50 rupees a kg, you know, right now. Let's suppose whatever import price that are there, and your own production will be even lower than this. So, you know, if you go through that LanzaTech route, any idea that what sort of cost, you know, will be entailing that? Because if that becomes viable, then I think it could completely replace, you know, your crude. So that is the biggest trigger for this sector. And so if you could guide, I know, you know, it is the domain of LanzaTech, but since you people are also into association with them, if you could guide us, some ballpark assessment of that will be really helpful, sir. Thank you, sir.
Look, Bajrang, you know, obviously you have curiosity and we have excitement, but, you know, it's also right for me to give a correct assessment. You know, as these technologies evolve, it's not that they will only come from one location in future. They will start to come from multiple sources and locations. And before we start to feed this market, it is very difficult to start to immediately say that the price that which I got LanzaTech alcohol for trials last year is the price that I should be taking going forward. So I would not hazard that guess. However, for the few customers that we are working with, obviously there is an agreement. They understand that price. There is a willingness for them to launch a few brands for their own sustainability positioning. Right now, the biggest driver for people is to be the front runners in adopting these technologies and therefore position themselves as sustainability leaders. And as these technologies evolve, obviously, you know, prices and with scale coming up, it will become more and more interesting. I think it is too far-fetched right now to say that it will entirely replace crude. I think that's not going to happen for a long time. But yes, it will become these kind of materials. If you go back to a brief discussion I had, which is talking about the longer term, that's the direction. People will move towards not only renewables, but more importantly, more products which have a lesser carbon footprint, which is cellulosic based, which I think when that is established, that should be excellent for India. You know, we create that much of a farm base, to moving to algae based, to moving to emission based, to moving to materials which come from the green hydrogen route. So there is a bouquet of sustainable technologies and solutions which are right now evolving. There is no doubt that this is the direction which is going to go forward. This bouquet is going to play around. We are fortunate that we are participating in some of those. Very difficult to give you an exact number. I think be with us for the next few quarters, 1 year, and the picture will be clearer to you as well.
Great. Thank you very much, sir, for this detailed clarification and wish you all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bajrang. You know, Bajrang, you started, you always start off by that always scares me. You know, your back of the envelope calculation. Your back of the envelope calculation is very precise and highly insightful.
Sir, that comes because I am a gold medalist chartered accountant. So, no argument on that. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, okay, all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Nagraj from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and thank you for presentation. It is having a lot of details in terms of the industry dynamics. So my first question is on the specialty amide. So as I understand that probably in the initial phase we may be going in for ethanol amide and then probably the further derivatives of it. So what is the thought process from the amide space? As I understand, there is significant requirement in the domestic market. But again, for the amide, probably will be going through ethylene oxide and ammonia process, wherein we'll need incremental EO. So how are we going to tackle this entire project? And what are the milestones that we are trying to have in this particular project? Thank you.
Rohit, you are right that initially we will be looking at amines which use feedstock that we have, for example, ethylene oxide. And in the amines portfolio, there are also a wide range of amines. There are the amines which are considered as relatively commodity, MEA, DA, TA. Then on the other side, there are products like MDA and their derivatives, which we think are the ones we should be looking at first. In a small way, as I said, we are only modifying our plant to produce. And then also derivatize them, make other products based on that. Our current project is not about MEA, DA, TA. However, we do believe that there would be requirement for amines also, which are based on bio-based resources. There have been discussions. People have asked about the same to us, and I will just pass on in a minute to Professor Kandel to talk about it. I think it's early days for us to immediately talk about what's the size of the prize and how fast we will get there. So these are our initial steps in amines. We will start with where we can create more value, spend less capex, and then build it up as a business based on a few factors. You know, our product development, increasing traction for higher quality and sustainable products, and then take it from there. I pass it on to Professor Kandel to add.
No, I think it has been well explained, but I just want to add one very, an additional point on this, that please understand, in times to come now, the R&D on these products would be more collaborative R&D. And instead of we designing a molecule or a process and going to the customer and selling it, it will be completely different now. Now the people will ask by choice. And they would say they have there in their plans to replace these products. Referring to your point like MEA, DA, TA, almost about 15% of MEA and TA are the component of FMCG products which are there in the market, which is in billions of dollars, you can imagine. Now these fellows, when they go even by lowest percentage of replacement every year, they would go by choice. So we stand a big chance because we are designing these molecules along with their R&D, along with their marketing team, that this is what they are going to launch. And this is what the scenario is there with the purple ethoxylates we launched with LenzaTech and Unilever. I mean, everything was fixed there. The raw material supplier was there. The consumer was there. So R&D, India Glycols has to be doing only the collaborative work and learning new knowledge through this collaboration. So it will be a different dimension of R&D.
Right, sir, got it. And just to explain about the R&D, so the technology is already cracked at the R&D as well as pilot level. Herein, we'll be doing it on a smaller commercial level through the plant modification. Is that right?
See, as far as the technology for these amines we are talking, we already have in-house R&D. We don't need that. As I said before, only when we go for the backward integration, like for example, we make the base molecules of amine, then we would be requiring the partners for technology, or maybe we will have to design technology. But these, like MDA, all alkanol amines, we have our own technology. And what plant modification required is that the facilities which are there to manufacture certain existing products, how we are able to take up these products in the same line, those modifications are talked about.
Right, sir. Got it. That's it from my side. Thank you so much and best of luck, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Fares Mehman from Ascent as well. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, you are, sir.
Fantastic. So congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations to the team on a resilient performance. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can. Just make an effort to speak slightly loudly.
Absolutely. So I have just a couple of questions. The update on Lanza was great. I wanted to understand, in terms of our current capacity utilization, where we stand, and B, there was a mention on our prior call with regard to the Delhi excise tax reduction, and wanted to ask if that happened, if that's captured in our results.
Delhi excise tax reduction.
Yes, we didn't understand this question on this excise tax reduction. Can you just elaborate?
I believe in our last conference call, we were told that there's to be a change in the excise tax and there's a max advantage for IMFL in Delhi.
No. Regarding Delhi excise policy, Delhi excise policy has announced from November to March 31st. Again, we are hearing that Delhi excise will continue with this policy for the 2022 and 23 years without any sizable change in the policy. So this is the news coming, but this is not assenting, but trade is expecting that the same policy will be continuing in the next year.
Understood. Understood. Okay, great. And the current capacity utilization that we're looking at, sir?
One capacity utilization number, because it completely varies on our product line. The short answer to your question is, in the portable spirit space, we have plans and we are right now augmenting capacities to cater to growth. As far as ethylene oxide is concerned, we have adequate capacities for the next few years of growth. And for the bio-based specialties, I think Professor Khandal already talked about it, we are in the process of putting up new facilities to add capacities. So it's a qualitative answer, but probably addresses your question.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll get back in queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Marcel, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. I have a couple of questions. One is just regarding that, considering this a cost increase because of power equipment and the other raw material cost. What action, or I think that some more action needs to be taken on the finance cost side? I mean, say, compared to last year, there has been some reduction in the finance cost, but if you see the last three quarters, it is hovering around 15 crore per month. So if you see that our finance cost is almost about 70% of the PAT, profit after tax. So I think that some more action needs to be taken to reduce the finance cost, because whatever we can save in the finance cost will directly reduce our will directly increase the profit. So I feel that I'm sure that the CFO is definitely taking some action, but I want to just in this call that what action are being taken on the repricing of the existing loan from the existing lenders, what actions are being taken on refinancing of the existing loan from some other banks at a lower rate, because now our financial position or the rating has significantly increased. And number three, over the last 9 months, we got a cash profit of about 130 crore plus 450 crore we got from this our JV, this divestment. Total, we got about 580 crore. So how much has been repaid to the loan so that we can reduce the finance cost? Please.
So I'll take up the question number two first. Regarding the questions on the reduction in the finance cost, I will just like to tell you that if you see our finance cost in the last year, it was almost 25 crores or 30 crores per quarter, which has come down to 15 crores. So that is because of the two or three reasons. One is that the prepayment of the loan. Number two, we have swapped some of the high cost loan to the low cost loan, as well as the more utilization for the export credit. The company is still working on the same to reduce the high cost loan by swapping or prepaying from its own sources. Second, yes, we are availing more and more PCFC and other things related to export so as to reduce the cost. The third thing is, you will find in next year when our cash flow will improve after the grain distillery and this thing, automatically the finance cost will come down because the utilization relating to the working capital limits will reduce. Okay. We are also working for the swapping of the other high cost loan, which is in process because of what you said is correct, is because of the rating improvement. Yes, that is in process and we will take up. So you will find from next year onwards, there is a reduction in the finance cost further.
No, no, I understand, sir. Like, being a chartered accountant, I'm only insisting on this one, that last year our finance cost was 73 crore. Means, 48 was 18.25 crore. Now we are 15 crore. So hardly there is a reduction of 3 crore. Since we got 450 crore from the divestment, 130 crore we generated 550 crore. Even if we repaid 400 crore out of this as a repayment, 400 crore at least if you consider 8% saving, it's 32 crore. So quarterly savings should come 8 crore. Whereas we have only 3 crore saving in the interest. So what I'm saying, kindly put some rigorous target to the CFO to achieve it faster. Because like as you know, currently the crude is now $96 vis-a-vis $82 in the last quarter. So this quarter we will get more heat from the in the power and fuel and the other ancillary cost. So this is one avenue which can offset the increase in the cost. So we request you to please take some more action and more some more targets, stricter targets, so that we can reduce this finance cost at least from 15 crore to 12 crore at least in this quarter, number one. And my second question, sorry.
We are on the job, that's what we can say. And our, of course, the insight is that we are targeting finance cost to reduce, and for that we are okay.
And then the second question regarding...
Marshall, I'm sorry to interrupt. May we request you to come back in queue for follow-up questions? Thank you. The next question is from the line of Keshav from Araxan Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir. Sir, I have a question for Plant Meg. And kudos to the earlier participants for asking some great questions. It's sort of built on one. So the product has huge potential to take up share in the pet market over the years. But one major prohibitive factor is always the cost relative to the fossil derived products. Though the pledges will accelerate these alternatives, the overall economics in general is the most organic driver of adoption. So there's a Dutch player who has a patented single-step catalytic process to manufacture this, which puts it at cost and quality parity with the fossil-derived one. We, on the other hand, have, I guess, a multi-step process for the same raw material, which is glucose, I believe. And we have seen firsthand by the story of a recently listed chemical player in India of how such process efficiency can completely disrupt the market. They took up the lion's share within just a few years by following a similar route. So I wanted to understand from you if we are also looking into such technologies ourselves to safeguard if we were challenged by something like that.
So which product are you talking about when you say there is a product?
Plant Meg.
Yeah. M-E, okay.
Yes, M-E-G, yes.
Yeah, so you know you are saying there are technologies which can do it through different routes. We are aware of some development work happening there. Right now we are not directly working on those, but Professor Kandal will probably throw some more light.
You see, sir, I have only one thing to say. MEG can be produced only by two ways. One is you have ethylene, oxidize and make MEG. The other way is that you have carbon dioxide, hydrogen reacting in and making MEG. The catalyst is required, and there are people who are claiming that they can do even from the CO2 coming from the atmosphere directly MEG. But they are not successful. We are not focusing on this kind of R&D for the simple reason that India is not on good standing as far as the catalyst development is concerned. So all those technology suppliers who have this catalyst technology, they are trying on almost every base material to produce the final product. So at the moment we have no plans on that. And the second point is the MEG produced by purple ethylene oxide is the most net zero point of view, most least carbon footprint material. And the technology is very simple and well established and proven.
So in the
I may also add that even in the carbon smart, there is a requirement and all of us talk about it, and you are also very interested in knowing about it. For the next few years, we only see a small fraction of our product being serviced in the carbon smart area. Before I start to give you an impression, and you are obviously very excited about it, that, you know, suddenly we'll have an MEG plant producing all carbon smart MEG. That is maybe, hopefully, in the, you know, not in near future, but later on.
Yes, basically, I'm not trying to estimate a near or medium term target, but directionally, if we have that know how, if we are focused on that, because I'm not talking about next 3 to 5 years. It's more a long drawn and decadal view. So, okay, I'll come back in the queue. Thank you.
Sir, I just want to say one thing. The value addition is not in making the monoethylene glycol cheaper. The value addition is converting ethylene oxide into products of high performance and high value. MEG is a commodity, like earlier said by Rupak ji. Many of the commodity chemicals will continue to be based on crude, like the polymers, like the monomers, like MEG. Only a fraction of it will go to shift to purple or bio. But the real high value products which are going into pharma, which are going into personal care, which are going into food, they are the ones who will be based on bio and this purple EO. And that is where the focus would be, not on MEG. This is just I wanted to say.
I got your point. What you're saying essentially is there are better technologies in your radar which will make the product in a simple and more cost-effective way. Are we keeping track on those? The point is, we are not working on any of those right now. We are aware of some work happening in parts of the world. We are keeping an eye on that. If it is something which is viable for us and we can collaborate with somebody to get those technologies on board, we shall do it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, we will take the last question from the line of Divyam Lohia from Ramshila. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Divyam, you are audible.
Yes. So I'm a personal investor. Thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to know, as an investment point of view, I wanted to make an investment or consider an investment. So I wanted to know how much of monopoly can we gain over a period of time in a product like this, like ethanol. And I wanted to know, under what brand do we have any brand based alcohol, if you can answer?
If it is, are you talking about the potable spirit space or are you talking about the alcohol in general?
Alcohol in general.
Okay. So let me tell you that, you know, we do have right now a unique position in terms of making ethylene oxide from bio-based ethanol. There is only one more company in the world which, to my knowledge, does it. We were the first one. We are still the largest one. So that does not make our product, you know, bio-based and with a lower carbon footprint. And from our perspective, you know, for some time at least, you know, we will continue to have that position. In future, as bio-based ingredients expand, other people may enter the space, but in, you know, what we think is that will only expand the market. In ideal, what we are focusing on, rather than maintaining a monopoly which is not in my hand, as of now we think that's a strong position or there's a good position, is to use our bio-based credentials and create more value-added products in terms of performance. So our sense, you know, sometimes I may end up conveying that it is only because, you know, we have a unique position in terms of making products from bio-based ethanol, we would like to see it slightly differently. Of course, that is a strength, but we would like to see our strength as also our ability to make products, design products, collaborate with partners, do application development, do product development. So look at the two in combination.
I just want to, because this question is very interesting and very, it is quite mind-boggling, and I thought I will give you inputs.
Thank you.
In the year 1955 to year 1967, three basic molecules were produced from bioethanol first time in India. One was by ICI and the plant came up in Kolkata. And they were manufacturing bioethylene, making polyethylene bio. The second one was styrene butadiene that came in down south. And the third one came PVC, which is Chemplast. All these three molecules, and this I am telling you specifically because when we discuss about chemicals made from the base material, we should understand what these chemicals are for. PVC, styrene butadiene and polyethylene, green, bio, will never be viable even if all countries decide to shift, even if even Saudi Arabia decides to shift from petroleum. Because these are the molecules which will continue to be on that. But the molecules which are meant for human consumption, which are meant for veterinary applications, which are meant for personal care, for FMCG, their petroleum products would be replaced by bio. And that is what is the niche for India Glycol. I thought I'll just give you this input because after 67, within 10 years, ICI plant was shut down, purchased by Bindal Agro, and which again they never manufactured polyethylene. Chemplast switched over from ethylene coming from bio to petroleum, and the styrene butadiene is also based on styrene imported and butadiene imported. This is because we had even plant in Bareilly, which as old as 1970s, and it could not run for more than 4-5 years, never manufactured styrene butadiene.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rupak Saraswat for closing comments.
So thank you for joining us, for all of you who have joined, and I hope we were able to respond to your questions in a manner which was satisfactory. That's all from my side, and also a thank you to my colleagues and also from my colleagues to all of you. Have a good day and see you in the next quarter.
Thank you, Rupanji.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sunidhi Securities, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.